This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
The chips are hot at Hot Chips.
And the bidding war for three-par heats up.
Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for August 27, 2010. Available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined by Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. Well, good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael. Has it been hot down there this week?
It has been burning hot down here. Our first taste of summer finally in late August on the West Coast here, so we're joining the rest of the world and getting a dose of hot summer. How about you?
Well, I think the heat wave that hit us on the West Coast just coincided with the Hot Chips conference that we had here, right?
Yeah, it was very apropos. The Hot Chips conference up in Stanford, up in your neck of the woods, was...
Maybe that's what was causing all the heat.
Yeah. There was a lot of interesting stuff going on there.
Michael, you got a chance to see a lot of the news that came from all the different vendors that, the announcements all crowd up around this type of thing. And I know there were announcements not only from the likely candidates with Intel and AMD and IBM, but even some news that went out beyond that. Rather than ask you to recap them all right off the top, I'll ask what impressed you.
Well, news out of that, it seemed like it was sort of very oriented towards, if not HPC, sort of the high end. So AMD talked about Bulldozer, Intel talked about their Westmere EX, their next gen, IBM talked about their Power 7 hub chip for their Perks, supercomputer architecture. And then the Chinese were talking about their Gotsen chip, which is also headed for supercomputing duty. So it seemed all very sort of oriented towards my interest. So there was a lot of different, stories about that, and it seemed very much about HPC in a way. And there was a lot of other stuff going on there too. It was a 2 or 3 day conference, and they had a lot of other presentations. But
well, just that in itself is interesting to have that much high end coverage out of this conference, right?
Yeah, and I think part of it is everything's moving towards multi-core. Everything's sort of becoming a supercomputing chip. Whether all these things will end up in supercomputers or not, they're going to be doing double duty there.
That's an excellent point. I mean, the trend in HPC has for several years been that you're using commodity components and then differentiating them in other ways with the stack. So the processors themselves are just trying to run as fast as they possibly can.
Exactly. Now the IBM thing, and I'll just talk a little bit about that first. They were talking about the hub chip on their Perk supercomputer, basically the hub controller that connects their Power 7, HPC setup that is going into their next generation supercomputer, and it's similar to the one that's going to the Blue Waters next year at NCSA, and that's a very interesting hub chip. I mean, sort of like the Gemini chip that Cray has and the Altix UV hub chip that SGI has, but this is the one connecting the Power 7 chips inside their high-end HPC server, and it's got like a terabyte per second of bandwidth, something ridiculous, and they talked about that in a lot of detail there, and it was quite interesting.
This is interesting because this is showing that IBM is staying relevant as a chip provider for the high-end space, and as much as we talk about Intel and AMD as the two primary contenders, and then there's all the focus around NVIDIA with accelerators, showing that the power architecture really has the staying power to remain a relevant part of the conversation.
Yeah, and I think IBM is very much sold on its own technology here. They're looking at this, I think, even more than their BlueJeans technology is sort of being sort of the future of their supercomputing offerings. I know they'll be having BlueJeans platforms as well, but whenever I hear about IBM talking about something, this seems to sort of be at the top of the list now, their Power 7 architecture. So, yeah, I think they're going to be in this space for a while. I think they've got a lot of confidence about this. And it's some technology they can also leverage to their enterprise server platforms too, the power architecture in general. So in a way that they can't do that with BlueJeans. This is something IBM's going to be supporting for the long term, I think.
Yeah, clearly. Now, it's not like they're in a leadership position in the HPC market from a share perspective with these chips. I mean, they're in a definitive third place, right? And AMD's kind of in a definitive second place, and Intel's in a definitive first place. There's big drop-offs from one to the next when you look at how many of these chips people have installed. But we do see that that share recently has been relatively stable, and as they continue to incorporate these into their high-end systems, that's going to be an important ongoing trend.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, the power stuff will be a niche play in HPC. I mean, the two big ones, like you just said, is AMD and Intel. And AMD, with what they announced at, or what they previewed, really, at Hot Chips, their Bulldozer Core architecture, they're looking to get back some market share they've been losing to Intel over the past several years. And I think this really is, it's really sounded like something that they want to use and sort of get that magic back they had at the beginning of the decade with their original Opteron, where they sort of leapfrogged over Intel, got a more integrated architecture with the memory controller and the NUMA architecture that Intel had at the time for 64-bit x86. And at that time, they dominated market share for a while, in HPC at least, if not in the enterprise space. And
they
now,
did. They were outshipping Intel significantly for a while, and as a result, were actually the installed base leader still, barely, in 2008, although Intel had started to regain the lead on new systems then, and Intel's lead has been accelerating ever since.
Yeah, and I think you were just telling me recently, Intel's, now your latest figure said they're like at 59% of market share in HPC, and AMD's now at 33, which is not great, but it's a lot better than they're doing in the regular market. I think the recent numbers I saw, Intel's like got 90-some percent of the market, and AMD's down to 6% in the server market. And so they're still doing pretty well here, but they want to get back to where they were, and I think they are looking at this Bulldozer architecture and the CPUs coming from it to help them do that.
Right. If you look at overall installed base in HPC, those are the numbers, Intel 59 to AMD 33. If you look at systems that were installed just within the last year, Intel's lead is going to be greater than that. The trend has been going in that direction. AMD really needs to reverse the trend, reverse the direction if they don't want to see that share continue to fall. And then so 59, 33, that's 92, and then IBM makes up almost all of the rest.
Right. Now, the Bulldozer is an interesting architecture. I don't know if it's going to have the impact to reverse this trend, because obviously Intel's not sitting still either. They just announced their West Mary X chip. They've got a Sandy Bridge architecture next year. But in a way, this is AMD's first new architecture in like 7 years for their CPU,
right.
For their high-end CPUs, I should say. And it's basically, they've sort of got into the SMT space in a sense. They're sort of halfway between an SMT, like what Intel's doing with hyper-threading, and a pure core architecture. They've basically got a core that splits two integer cores, which they're calling cores because that's what it looks like to the software, in sort of one component, and those two integer schedulers share an FPU unit and an L2 cache, but it acts like two cores. So if you have like four of these Bulldozer things inside on a chip, that basically gives you eight cores. So it'll be interesting to see what the performance is like on this, if the cost of these chips that are going in there will compete. And if so, you know, maybe they've got a chance to reverse this, but Intel's, you know, they're tough. They're not standing still. It's a moving target for them, so they've got to compete against better process technology in Intel. They're going to be on 32 nanometer before AMD can get there.
Well, they certainly have a chance to reverse it. One thing we've said before that perpetuates in the HPC industry is that price performance is king, and that there isn't any particular loyalty to one processor vendor over another. If something's providing a clearly better solution, then people will switch over. But it is noteworthy that the real big momentum shifts in the Intel versus AMD war in HPC have come not
only with new technologies from one or the other, but coinciding with missteps by the competitor. AMD's big surge with Opteron was not only a result of them having the first x86-64 type of architecture, but came at the same time that Intel was kind of fumbling with Itanium and the first generation Merced, and the delays in McKinley, and the eventual lack of uptake, of significant uptake in Itanium in the HPC market relative to what analysts had and Intel themselves had predicted at the time. It really never took off, and that's when Opteron really took hold. Then the momentum went back the other way when Intel got its x86-64s really going at the same time that that AMD had the product introduction woes with the Barcelona chip. So, you know, your point about it being a moving target is well met. And right now they both kind of are running along at approximately the same speed. But if someone trips, it offers the other the ability to race ahead.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, a lot of it did come because of the other's missteps. And for at least the last year or so, they've been executing pretty well in parallel. So nobody's really made some big mistakes. So. Yeah, I mean, I look at the Bulldozer architecture and say, yeah, this could be very interesting if they get good performance and they're able to produce, you know, good cost benefit out of it. That'll be more competitive, but it's not going to be like it was, where there was this, sort of this disconnect between the early Opterons and the Xeons of that era, where there was an obvious advantage to AMD. I can't see that coming out of what's coming up ahead. So unless somebody does make a mistake, I think it's going to be a tough road for AMD. They're going to maybe gain back some if this architecture works out well, but I don't see any big changes ahead.
Yeah, well, they can certainly hope to stabilize their share at least, and you know, stay current in the price performance calculation. There will always be workflows that run better on one chip versus another, or people who prefer one architecture to another. So AMD will stay in the game with that. But yeah. To be in a position where you're hoping for Intel to do something wrong in order to gain share is a tough position to be in. It happens.
Yeah.
But not with the frequency you might like if you were AMD.
Yeah. And I think AMD's big chance, I think they realize this too, because they talk about it all the time, is when they come up with these fusion chips. And one of the processors cores they talked about this past week, Bobcat, which was in their low power client side, is going to be going into their fusion, their GPU CPU fusion chips. And I think the Bulldozer core will eventually end up in fusion chips as well. And I think that will be the big leverage where they can sort of outmaneuver Intel down the road, and maybe in HPC as well, they'll have these fusion chips. So I think that is maybe something we can look forward to as maybe a big break. But right now, I think they're just kind of trying to tread water.
And it wasn't just the big guys, Intel, AMD, IBM, with their chips. There was an outsider came in that you found interesting.
Right, and this is, we've been following these guys for a while. It's the Chinese-made Godson chips, which is being funded by the government there. They want their own CPU technology, so they're not relying on foreign microprocessors to the extent they are now. And so their next-generation Godson, which they talked about at Hot Chips, is going to be an 8-core 65-nanometer chip, and that's undoubtedly going to head into some supercomputers and high-performance computers. And then the following year, that was going to be for 2011, the following year there's going to be a 16-core Godson chip, 3C, and that's going to also going to be going into some supercomputers there if that schedule holds. So the Chinese are doing quite a bit of interesting stuff as well there.
Yeah, and especially at the high end, and this shouldn't be a surprise to us, in as much as the entry-level and mid-range high-performance computing markets are virtually non-existent in China, they have done a lot of work on the supercomputing side. It's more of their aligned to their vision of high-performance computing and supercomputing, and their desire to have their own domestic chips to go into these supercomputers isn't surprising either. We think a lot of the workflows in China are national security and defense related, and they would prefer to be running them on Chinese architectures, and if they can.
Yeah, and I think it sounds like this particular line is maturing and could be competitive. I think the chip they were talking about for 2011, the 8-core version, you know, delivered something like 128 gigaflops and like 40 watts. So they're very cognizant of the performance per watt here. And, you know, that would be a decent chip in any country. And I think if they can achieve that, they'll get a lot of mileage out of that.
Absolutely. Well, these chips weren't the only things heating up this week. We've also been following in the news mostly the bidding war for 3-PAR between HP and Dell. That's been pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean, we sort of saw that last week. Well, I mean, Dell started this, it seemed like just a week ago. They made this bid. They wanted to get this storage networking capability through 3-PAR, and that looks like it was going to be the end of it. Then HP got into it, and then they've been one-upping each other ever since. And this morning, HP was reported to make its another bid at like $30
a share. It's taking off. You're right, Michael. Last week in our little non-recorded pre-show, we made the decision not to discuss Dell and 3-PAR. HP wasn't in it at the time because you know the impact on HPC was going to be limited at the time, and it's still primarily a cloud story that's not focused on HPC, but we think there are some interesting trends there, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is, right, these guys are looking for a storage cloud play that they don't have right now, and I think all the big server OEMs want that. I mean, IBM sort of already got that. I think Cisco's gonna be looking for it, Oracle certainly. But yeah, Dell and HP, they wanna play in the cloud space, and so these companies are looking to build complete systems they can offer more as services than just selling hardware into these things. So,
to me, it was more interesting for Dell than it was for HP. I mean, I look at it with HP, and I get that they want to be in the cloud, but, you know, geez, with PolyServe and now iBrix and now 3-PAR, it kind of feel like it's like my wife is buying another purse. they love buying companies like this. For Dell, it's more important because it's indicative of a strategic shift I've been perceiving at Dell to become more solutions focused, in some of these high-end markets. For general IT, Dell has been solutions focused, but for the high-end markets, for cloud, for HPC, they've been viewed more as box providers, and I think we're going to be seeing a significant strategic shift from Dell in terms of having a robust data management strategy, not just for cloud, but for HPC, talking about interconnects, talking about IO, and I think you'll be seeing more complete solutions from Dell as a result.
Yeah, I think you're right. And they've sort of come along rather rapidly. I mean, you know, what, 20 years ago they were just selling PCs, and now they're obviously well into the server business. But yeah, they're looking to be, you know, one of the big guys with HP and IBM. They've got ambitions here, and this was part of it. And if they don't get the 3-PAR buy, I think they'll probably be looking elsewhere. And I don't know where exactly, maybe Isilon or one of the other SAN companies, but I don't think they're going to...
Manassas, Blue Arc. There's a lot of significant storage companies in the HPC space.
Yeah, and I think most of these storage companies will probably eventually end up getting bought out by some of these big server OEMs. It's just the way things are going. If things are going to really be moving to the cloud, you're going to have more of an integrated offering from these companies, or they're going to want to do that. There's going to be sort of less sort of niche storage companies around, I think. So this might be indicative of that, and we might see that in HPC as well, especially to some of the vendors that are themselves moving to cloud models.
There's another possibility, which is that Dell and HP are getting into a bidding war just to keep the news away from Michael Dell and Mark Hurd.
Yeah, well, they've got their own troubles there, that's for sure. But that's a lot of money to spend to keep the news away. $2 billion, you could probably do better than that.
No, I mean, it's a funny situation, but 3-PAR, you know, has this technology that's going to be relevant in the cloud space. I'm sure that Nicole is tracking it very closely on your HPC in the cloud side.
She has written about it, yes.
And it's going to have an impact on all of us in the HPC side eventually.
Yeah, and we'll see what the final numbers turns out to be, but it's already, I mean, some people think it's already ridiculous. It was already ridiculous at one point, whatever, $5 billion, and people are thinking, well, $2 billion is just even more so. But somebody's going to get something here, and they're going to make a lot of people rich. I think 3PAR's got like 650 employees, and they're all paying like $2 billion for it. So it's like, what's that work out to, like $3 million per employee or something? So that's quite...
Well, they can turn around and buy our company next, maybe.
Yeah, there you go.
Excellent. Well, Michael, it's good talking to you as always. Enjoy when we get to cover the news coming out of these conferences. We got a lot more of those coming up.
Yes, we do. All right. Well, we'll catch up again next week. And until then, have a great weekend and a great week ahead.
Thanks a lot, Michael. We'll talk to you later.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.